A rescue ship can reach them in a few days, often in a matter of mere hours. But out here, in the belt, forget about rescue. The distances are too great, and the possible rescue ships too few. The prospectors knew they were on their own as soon as they left Ceres. Fuchs grinned to himself as he thought about all the other uses the emergency vehicles had been put to. Extra storage capacity. Extra crew quarters. Micrograv love nest, when detached from the spinning ship, so the pod could be weightless. "But you," he said silently as he installed the telemetry transmitter into Star Power's escape pod. "You will be a decoy. They will think you are me, while I head silently for George's asteroid." Once he returned to the bridge and sat in the command chair, he thought of Amanda. "Should I tell her what I'm about to do?" He wanted to, but feared that his message would be overheard by Humphreys's people. "It's obvious they have infiltrated the IAA," Fuchs thought. "Perhaps the flight controllers on Sirius are secretly taking money from him. If something happens to the escape pod, Amanda will think I've been killed. How can I warn her? Let her know what I'm doing?"
Then he felt an icy hand grip his heart.
"What would Amanda do if she thought I was dead? Would she mourn me? Try to avenge me? Or would she run to Humphreys? That's what he wants. That's why he wants me dead. Will Amanda give in to him if she thinks I'm out of the way?"
He hated himself for even thinking such a thought, but he could not escape it. His face twisted into an angry frown, teeth clenched so hard it made his jaws ache. He banged out the keyboard commands that ejected the pod into a long, parabolic trajectory that would send it across the belt. It took an effort of will, but he did not send a message back to his wife.
"I am alone now,"
Fuchs thought as he directed Star Power toward the asteroid where Big George had last been heard from.
Diane Fairford was reading her favorite Bible passage, the story of the crooked steward who cheated his boss and made himself a nice feather bed for his retirement. Whenever she had qualms about what she was doing, she called up Luke chapter 16, verses 1 through 13. It reassured her. Very few people understood the real message of the story, she thought, as she read the ancient words on the wall screen of her apartment. The steward was eventually fired when his boss found out about his cheating, but the key to the tale was that the steward's thefts from his master's accounts were not so huge that the master wanted vengeance. He just fired the guy. And all through the years that the steward had been working for this master, he had put away enough loot so he could live comfortably in retirement, a sort of golden parachute that the boss didn't know about. Fairford leaned back languidly in her recliner chair. It adjusted its shape to the curves of her body and massaged her gently, soothingly. It had originally belonged to Martin Humphreys, but she had shown him an advertisement for a newer model, which he had immediately bought and then instructed her to get rid of this one. So she removed it from his office and installed it in her own quarters. With a voice command, she ordered the computer to show her personal investment account. The numbers instantly filled the wall screen. "Not bad for a girl from the slums of Amsterdam," she congratulated herself. "Over the years, you've avoided the usual pitfalls of prostitution and drug dependency, and even steered clear of becoming some rich fart's mistress. So far, so good." She spoke to the computer again, and the list of asteroids that she personally owned the claims for appeared on the screen. Only a half dozen of the little rocks, but they were producing ores nicely and building up profits steeply. Taxes would take a sizable chunk of the money, but Fairford reminded herself that no government can tax money that you don't have. "Pay the taxes and be glad you owe them," she told herself. Of course, Martin thought that HSS owned the claims to those asteroids, but with so many others in his clutches, a mere half dozen was down below his radar horizon. Besides, whenever he wanted to check on anything, he always asked his trusted assistant to do it. so he'll never find out about this little pilfering until after I've left his employment. She cleared the list from the screen, and the verses from Luke came up again. I'll be able to retire very comfortably in a couple of years, Fairvord told herself. It will all work out fine, as long as I don't get too greedy. And as long as I keep Martin at arm's length, the moment I give in to him, my days as an HSS employee are numbered. She looked at her reflection in the mirror across the room and smiled to herself. Maybe I'll give him a little fling once I'm ready to retire. Once he fires me, I'll get severance pay, or at least a nice little going-away present for Martin. He's like that. Turning from her own image back to the words from the Bible, she frowned slightly at the final verse. No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and Mammon. Perhaps, thought Diane Fairford, but I'm not really serving Martin Humphreys. I'm working for him. I'm getting rather wealthy off him, but I'm serving only myself and no one else. Still, she cleared the wall screen with a single sharp command to the computer. The Bible passage disappeared, replaced by a reproduction of a Mary Cassatt painting of a mother and child.
Dossier, Joyce Takamine. You had to have an education to be considered for a job at Cellini. The Lunar Nation was hiring engineers and technicians, not fruit pickers. Joyce's passport to the moon was a battered old palm comp that her father had given her. Through it, she could access virtually any class in any university on the nets. She studied every night, even when she was so tired from picking that she could barely find the strength to open the palm comp's scuffed plastic lid. The other pickers complained that the flickering light kept them from sleeping, so Joyce moved outside the barracks and kept doggedly at her studies out in the open, under the stars. When she looked up at the moon and saw Cellini's beacon light, it seemed to her as if that laser's bright beam was calling to her. Once a guy she briefly slept with stole her palm comp, just walked off with it, as if he owned it. In a panicked fury, Joyce tracked him down at the next camp and nearly took his head off with a 2x4. The owner's guards let her go once she told them the whole story. They had no use for thieves, especially stupid ones who let a scrawny Oriental girl cold-cock them. In 3 years, Joyce got her degree in computer systems analysis from California Coast University. She applied for an advertised job at Cellini. She didn't get it. 427 other people, most of them just as desperate and needy as Joyce, had applied for the same position. The same day that she was turned down by Cellini, she got the message that both her parents had died in a freeway pileup during the earthquake that destroyed the shantytowns up in the hills above the drowned ruins of San Francisco.
Nothing. Fuchs scowled at the display screens that curved around his command chair, then looked out through the bridge's windows. No sign of Walsing Matilda. Nothing here but the lumpy, irregular shape of an asteroid tumbling slowly in the barren emptiness, dark and pitted, and strewn with small boulders and rocks. This was the last position that the IAA had for Big George's ship. Matilda's telemetering had cut off here, at this location, but the ship was nowhere in sight. Almost without consciously thinking about it, he put star power into a tight orbit around the little asteroid. Was George really here? He wondered. If he was, he probably didn't linger very. Then he saw an area on the roid where neat rectangular slabs had been cut out of the rock. George had been here. He had started to mine the asteroid. Turning up the magnification on his telescope to max, Fuchs saw that there was still some equipment standing on the surface. He left in a hurry, Fuchs realized. Too much of a hurry to pick up all his gear. It was a cutting laser, Fuchs saw, still standing silently at the edge of one of the cutout rectangles. I must retrieve it, he said to himself.